We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and tonight our topic is the pasuk Shomer Pivul Shono, Shomer Mitzarot Nafsho. He who watches his mouth and his tongue will watch himself from finding himself in a tzara, in a dire situation. Very often the key to escaping a dire situation is the care we take about what we say. Shomer Piv Ul Shono. So, we have many classes on conversations with wives, on conversations on how to understand them, on how to build a conversation in a relationship. Tonight we're going to talk about what we as men have to be careful, how we say, not to say, and let's begin maybe with the story of David HaMelech. It says in the Medrash that Yoav was wondering, why did David HaMelech say, truth is not David, but at any rate, that why did David HaMelech say, Mavet v'chayim b'yad lashon, life and death are in the hands of the tongue. Why are life and death in the hands of the tongue? Famous story, right? You guys know the story? There was a king. He became ill. His doctor said the only way he could be cured is by drinking the milk of a leopardess, of a female lion. So he asked who would go and get him milk from a female lion. One of his advisors said, I can do it. Just give me what I need. So he found a female lion with her cubs, and he brought her sheep. And day one, he stood far away from her, and he sent her a sheep forward, and she took the sheep and fed it to her cubs. He came back a day later, he brought another sheep, and every day he would come closer and closer to the lioness when he'd bring her the sheep to feed her cubs, until finally he was so close he could pet her. And he would come and he'd pet her and bring her the sheep, and she'd feed it to her cubs. And finally it reached a point where he not only could pet her, he could milk her. And he milks her and he gets the milk and he brings it to the king. And on his way home that night, he's sleeping in the forest. On his way home, he has a dream. And in his dream, the limbs start arguing with one another. The hands say, boy, am I great. The king is going to reward me so much. I gauged exactly how to pet that lioness. I gauged exactly how to milk her gently. Boy, am I great. And the feet said, I am so wonderful. I'm much better than you, the hands. I gauged just how close we could come to the lioness every day. I gauged exactly how much to advance. Boy, is the king going to reward me. And every limb in the body is saying, I did everything, it's all thanks to me. And finally the tongue says, you guys all couldn't accomplish anything without me. And all the limbs look at the tongue and they say, what are you worth? You didn't do anything. You didn't talk to the lioness. What did you do? You're worthless. And the tongue says, either you'll respect me as the king of the body, or I will teach you that I control what goes on here. And all the limbs said, ha, who are you? Why should you be the king of the body? What credit do you get? And the tongue says, okay, I'll show you. And then he awakens, and what a weird dream. He comes to the king, and the king is lying in bed ill, and the king asks him, did you bring me the leopardess milk? And he looks up and he says, your majesty, I brought it. I brought you a dog's milk. Here you go. So the king says, dog's milk? I've been funding you all this time to bring me dog's milk? Throw him in the dungeons. They toss him into the dungeons. And he's there crying. He can't figure out what just happened. So he's standing there trying to think what happened, and he falls asleep, and again, the weird dream. And the tongue says to the other limbs, the tongue says, no. Now what? We're on death row. You guys willing to concede now? Or do I have to play toughy? So all the limbs said, no, you're the king, you're the boss. You make it work. We can't succeed without you. So the guy awakens, and he turns to the guard, and he says, there's a grave misunderstanding. The language I speak, the word lioness and female dog are the same word. So the translator translated what I said as female dog. But really, this is from a lioness. It's from a lioness, and it'll cure the king. Bring me back to the king. There was a misunderstanding. So they brought him back to the king, and the king drank the milk, and he became cured. And that's a story of how Yoav understood, Mavet v'chaim b'yad lashon, life and death are at the hands of the tongue. Well, the same is true in marriage. Most of marriage revolves around the spoken and the unspoken word. Much more than the action is the word. So, Chazal tell us, if you want to know what a person's like, a person can be tested in three areas. Koso, kiso, kaso. Koso, his cup, when he drinks. When he drinks, so you see what, how he behaves. You want to know what he's like? See him when he drinks. You'll see how much he drinks, when he drinks. I had an interesting thing this past Shabbos. Two interesting things. One was I went to buy someone a gift. I was stuck on a bus. I had to get off to catch a mincha. So I got off from a place where I don't usually get off. And after I done mincha, I see a wine store across the street from the shul. So I realized I had to buy someone a gift. I went in to buy a wine. Really fancy wine store. And I told him, I know what this guy likes, this specific taste. They told me, here, we'll let you taste. I said, I have to go teach Machon Meir. This was Thursday night. I said, I can't, I'm going to drink too much. I'm not going to be able to teach anything. They said, no, we'll give you a small cup. Fine. So they gave me the taste A and B and C. And then they say, C is milchik. So I said, milchik? I'm buying him something for Shabbos. When's he going to have a chance to drink something milchik on Shabbos? Never mind, I don't need to taste C. I'm not getting C. So they said, boy, are you kidding? You like this friend, you'll get him a drink he could drink during the week. So I'm in the middle of an alcohol store, right? And I look at the seller, and I said to him, not quietly, drink in the middle of the week? Jews don't drink in the middle of the week. This is alcohol. You don't buy someone a drink he could drink in the middle of the week. He doesn't. No one should be drinking in the middle of the week. You have to be productive. Now, it's not good for his business, right? But it's the way people have to behave. Who's drinking alcohol in the middle of the week? What are you doing drinking alcohol? A person, I can understand you celebrate, you have a birthday once in a who knows what, but what are you buying a bottle for? On Shabbos? Oh, so then he can drink. That makes sense. During the week, you're supposed to be productive. So koso, you can tell a person by their cup, by their drinking. Kiso, their wallet. How do people spend their money? And kaso, their anger. And especially when people get angry, that's a time when you could start understanding who they are. And that's, if a person remembers that, very often that's the key that'll help a person maintain self-control. Because when you're upset, that's the real gauge. What type of husband are you? Now, there's a rabbi named Rabbi Feivelson. He teaches around the corner from here. And he asked a very nice question. He said, Chazal, tell us that when a person transgresses and they repent, so then what they did wrong can become a merit. Right? Everything you did wrong can become a merit, can become a mitzvah. So he asked, why do you have both extremes? Either an avera or a mitzvah. Why can't it be zero? Why can't you do tshuva and there's nothing there? So he said the following thought. He said, because the act was done. You can't erase it. You can't erase it. But what you could do is make it into a strength for the future. If a couple has an argument and they overcome it and they build their relationship, then that same thing that was a weakness becomes a strength. We overcame it and we built. So now it's a strength. There's no neutral. It's either up or down. When we enter a point of anger, we have to see that we have an opportunity now. Right now you're upset. Oh no, you're really upset. What's going to happen now? Are we going to lay another layer in the building of the family, or are we going to destroy a layer? So, kaso, it's a gauge. Who am I? And the first question we have to ask ourselves is, what are my limits? What are my limits? What are the lines I will not cross? Simple question, right? So let's take something which we shouldn't even have to discuss at Machon Meir. Do you ever lift a hand at your wife? Okay, so everyone says, no, of course not. Rabbi, you're insulting us that you even bring it up. Okay, fine, I agree. It's insulting, I shouldn't have to bring it up. So let's take the following scenario. You come home and your wife gives you something to eat, and you eat it and it tastes like vomit. So you spit it out. You go, and your wife goes, "What?" And you go, "That was terrible." And she says, "I can't believe you say that," and smacks you across the face. Now what do you do? Pause. Now you'll say, "I'm not marrying a girl like that." Right, everyone thinks they're not marrying a girl like that. We just said there's a red line, right? A red line we don't have to discuss. So I want to understand something. Is that red line even when she crossed the red line? I just gave a simple scenario, right? You ate it, and you feel like you're going to throw up as you're chewing it. And she got insulted, and she crossed the red line. She did something very inappropriate, to put it mildly. Now what do you do? I'll tell you what you do. You get even. You turn around and walk out of the house. I'm serious. The greatest rebuttal a man can give, the most painful thing a man can do to a wife, which you should almost never do, is to walk out. It is the most painful thing you can do to her. And it is almost always wrong to do it to her. Almost always, but not always. She crossed the red line. You're not supposed to be violent. You're not supposed to lift your hand at someone else. Certainly not your spouse. So I'm saying it's the one time that it makes sense to me that you walk out. You want to make sure you're not going to do anything you shouldn't do. So you walk away from the argument. What does she read it as? You are being spiteful, you are being hateful, you are being not nice, you were just mean to me, and now you're doing something else, because when you walk out, you have done the most painful thing to her. To her, by walking out, it's like terrible. We don't understand it. It's different, the male and female approach to things. But in the female mind, when you walk out that door, it doesn't matter if you'll walk back in 5 minutes. What you did was tremendous. I didn't say slam the door. I didn't say anything. You could say, you know, that's not right, and just walk out. But, okay, fine. You've put everything on pause. And by the way, you've just gotten even. But we'll leave that on the side, because marriage isn't about getting even. But you don't hit back. You never, should never, resort to violence. And if you have no choice, walk out. But don't be violent. So we have to set ourselves red lines. Meaning there are things I won't cross. And that means even if in my mind the other side crossed those lines, I'm not going to cross those lines. There are things I won't say. There are things I won't do. There's a type of person I won't become. I won't be vengeful. Now, this sounds obvious, right? I'm not a vengeful person. I don't take revenge. I'm not into it. But wait a second. But what happens when there's something going on? So, let's take a scenario. True story. A wife tells her husband, "I want you home today at 4. And the husband says, "I got things to do. I can't be home at 4. And she says, "But I want you home at 4. And he says, "Yeah, but my job's online. I can't be home. I'm not coming home at 4. And he doesn't. He shows up at 5. And when he shows up, the wife goes, "I told you I'm here at 4. And he says, "And I told you I can't be here at 4. And she takes his bag with all his instruments and throws it across the room and breaks his instruments. True story. The guy's a shochet. His rock that he sharpens his knife on broke. His best rock. Now, to find a rock that matches a knife is not a joke. It's not an easy matter. Meaning it's an art. To get a rock that matches a knife that you can really sharpen your knife on. So she takes his best rock. She didn't mean to do it. But she was so upset at him, she took his bag, threw it across the room, broke his best knife. Broke his best stone and knife. Stone that was imported from a country where you can't even access anymore now. There's violence there. Finished. So what do you do now? Right, you say, "My goodness, my goodness, what did you do?"
I'm going away. Understand?
One last use.
What?
One last use.
And the stone.
No. What?
She's violent.
So in life, we get surprises. Yaakov Avinu thinks he's marrying Rachel. He wakes up in the morning and it's Leah. Is there anything more deceitful than that? You tricked me. You told me you were someone else. We went under the chuppah and I thought you were Rachel. And I didn't mean to marry you. Can you imagine that? Imagine, right? You went on a blind date. You had all this internet conversation with someone. Everything went great. And then you come to the chuppah. And someone else comes under the chuppah. And this other person, you don't know. Right? And then the next morning, you suddenly discover, hey, wait a second, you're not the person I was dating all these years. 7 years I was building a relationship with someone. I thought I was marrying them. Why'd you trick me? How do you build a marriage with that person? How do you raise half your family with that person? How do you love that person? But it's not the person I want to marry. I did not want to marry you. You might be a wonderful person. I did not want to be in this relationship. Can you build with that? And what type of human being are you that you were willing to trick me into marrying you? But so you're a tzedekes, so you had good intentions. But I don't want a relationship with you. Be tzedekes with someone else. You're a wonderful human being. I didn't say you're bad, but I don't want you. Okay, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice to you. I'm going to build my life with you. I'm going to love you. Wait a second, but you're not the person I thought I was marrying. So your father's a wicked, deceitful, cunning person. And what type of person are you? Oh, so you have a good argument. I tricked my father out of the blessings, so you could trick me out of marrying, getting into my marriage. Oh. Wait a second, but we're talking about Yaakov Avinu. And we're talking about Leah Imenu. So now we're going to talk about some tools from Breslov. Okay? Breslov has an extreme approach, which we have to be careful how we apply. But sometimes it's very, very powerful. So let's recap before we move forward with Breslov, okay? We discussed the tongue being the key factor in building a relationship, controlling what we say. We discussed the idea that we are tested. We are gauged based on our reactions when we're angry. And we discussed that we have to draw red lines, and sometimes the other party will cross my red lines, but I shouldn't cross my red lines. It's a double standard, yes. Well, I expect her to live up to my red lines too. But even if she doesn't, I shouldn't fall from my red lines. So, our story takes place about 7 years ago. It was after the Jews were expelled from Gush Katif, and there were some very fine Jews behind bars. And I was online to visit one of those Jews in jail. This Jew was in prison for trying to ensure Jews weren't expelled from their home. And the way they let you in the prison, they make the prison cell very far from any public transportation. So if you want to visit anyone, it's very, very hard. And then they make the prison cell in a place where you're sitting, Arabs and Jews together, in a room where you have no heat and no air conditioning. So in the winter you're freezing, and in the summer you're broiling. And they tell you a time range when they'll let you in. So they don't tell you could come in at 8 o'clock in the morning or at 9 o'clock in the morning for visiting hours. They say, we will open the doors sometime between 8 and 11. So now you have to burn a whole morning to be there for that little niche when they'll let you in. So you show up and you sit there in the waiting hall with all these other fine characters. And we're sitting there waiting for visiting hour. And then they let you in groups. And they don't just let you in to see the prisoners. They let you in from the waiting room into the next room. And from the waiting room into the next room, you undergo security. And they yell at you, and sometimes they lose your ID cards and tell you didn't give it to them. Happened to me. Happened to other people there. It's like you think any other office, you get your ID card back, right? Here it doesn't work that way. They hold your ID, and then when you come back, they say, you didn't give me an ID. Go break your head over it now. Okay, fine. They let you in. And then after your first security screening, they take you for long walks down long hallways, and then they leave you in this dungeon. Wait. We'll let you into the next room soon. And now you sit there and you wait. And after you have no place to sit. You're standing there with kids and whoever you're standing with. After about 15, 20 minutes of torturing you because you came to visit a prisoner, you undergo a second security screening. And then after the second security screening, they bring you into a place where you might actually get to see the prisoner you came to visit. Or that you find out that, we're sorry, he did something wrong this week. We didn't give him visiting hours. You'll have to wait till everyone else's visiting hours are over, and then we'll let you out again. And you just burnt the whole morning for nothing. So the system is built so that you really suffer when you're coming to visit a prisoner. So, okay, we're suffering. We're sitting there waiting. And there are a lot of us there to visit different prisoners. And there's one man there who knew he had no way of getting there. So he came the night before and slept on the bench outside the prison so that he would be able to visit a young man who was in prison. Okay. So this man is standing there, and I'm standing there, and my wife and my kids, and another few families are there. And comes our turn, and we go through security one, and then we stand in the waiting hall, and after those 20 minutes, they let in group one, and they let in group two, and they're about to let in group three, and I'm there with group three, and this man who slept on the park bench is there with group three, and another family, and as they're about to let us in, they're doing a security check, and they discover a criminal offense. There are a few candies. There are a few candies. One of the people who wanted to come in wanted to bring a prisoner a few candies. So they put candies in the fresh wipes of their baby's fresh wipes bag. And they found three candies in a fresh wipe bag. Oh boy, you should have heard the yelling. You're trying to smuggle in candies. Oh no, this visit is canceled. Okay, I continue walking in. What does it have to do with me? They say, no, sir, you're not going in. What do you want from me? No, this whole group is part of the smuggling ring. Three candies, you are all not going in to visit. Locked. Now, go argue. Boom. I just burnt a whole day to visit this prisoner, and I can't go in. My wife, my kids, this man who came the night before and spent the night on a park bench, on a bench outside the prison, to go visit this prisoner, is now not going in to visit the prisoner. All of us are standing there being blamed because this lady wanted to bring in three candies to her relative. Terrible offense, right? Boom, our visit is canceled and there's no appealing, there's no one to talk to. So we're standing there and we're not too pleased with this lady. All of us are standing there and we don't say anything, and they were nice to us. They didn't make us stand there for the full hour and a half visit. After about I don't know how long, they send us back to the waiting hall so we could actually sit down and smolder in the heat and wait. And we're sitting there waiting to be released, and this guy who invested 2 days to visit this prisoner walks over and he says, Rabbi Nachman from Breslov said, Hashem is planning what's going on in the world. And that means that we were meant to be in this situation today, right now. This is all part of Hashem's big plan. I'm sitting there thinking, lady, what'd you do to this to me for? Right? I wouldn't have been smart enough to know she was risking my visit, but I was still feeling pretty upset at her, because in the end, I lost my visit because of her shtick, right? But he comes over and says, if Rabbi Nachman came to the world only for today, to tell us that I shouldn't be upset today, and you shouldn't be upset today, that was good enough. That was also a good enough reason. So I'm muttering under my breath. I'm saying to myself, I'm glad you believe that, because after what you went through, it'll give you the koch to take your ride all the way back up to the Golan again, not having visited your friend. But it stuck with me. And it is a phenomenally powerful tool, if used correctly. If you're looking at things and you're getting really burnt up inside of you, and there's nothing you can do, There's a reality here. And the reality is being defined for us. I can't change it now. There's nothing I can do, at least with my simple mind, to change what just happened, right? So I can spend the next 2 hours fuming at this lady, trying not to stare her to death, right? I feel like looking at her with bullets in my eyes, right? That's what I feel like doing at that moment. But he's right. And the truth is that I could have made the same mistake. But at that moment, that's not what we're thinking, right? At that moment, we're thinking, look at what she did to me. And I have this guy who's waiting for this visit, and the poor guy's going to have to go another who knows how long before someone visits him, and all for this. No. Sometimes you have to say the Ribbono Shel Olam planned it this way. There are things here that are beyond my control and her control and their control. And now I have to deal with reality in a happy way. I don't have to be upset at reality. So, Chazal tell us, Me'ashim Isha Le'ish. Hashem defines who you're going to marry. So when we're dating, we do all the work to do our homework and due diligence and everything to find out that it's the right person. And then afterwards we get married. And then after you get married, suddenly you discover this isn't what you expected. And then you find yourself in scenarios. What was the wording you used? Oh my goodness, right? You find yourself in scenarios where those are the words coming to mind. Oh my goodness, right? Guys, I don't know if at your age you saw Little Annie. There was this little girl in Little Annie that always, when she was impressed, she'd go, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. So that's, right, that's where you find yourself in marriage, saying, oh my goodness. But then you have to come to terms with it. You have to come to terms with it. And coming to terms with it, allows us to move forward and build. Revenge has no place in marriage. It's not about revenge. It's about we're building together. If we go back to what we discussed a few weeks ago, the idea that we're building something together. So what happens when a person discovers that you guys see I have warts on my hand? Might not have noticed, right? It's not pleasant. Right? I wake up one morning and I have warts on my hand. It's pretty annoying. It's not nice. So I go to the doctor and I say, what am I supposed to do? I got warts on my hands. He says, those aren't warts. That's a virus. I say, okay, what do we do about this virus? He says, talk to it. I said, and what's that going to do? He says, well, we don't know of anything else that'll work. You can try. I say, there's nothing modern medicine has to do to cure it. And he says, I told you, talk to it. I said, are you serious? He said, yeah. He says, alternative medicine says that by talking to it, you might change it. Modern science says we have no solution. It came as a virus, and one day your body's immune system will decide to wake up and fight it, and it'll disappear. And until your body decides to wake up and fight it, it's going to be there. And there's nothing you can do about it. Okay, so now what do I do? I don't like the look of it. But what choice do I have?
Here, buddy.
Right. So, I actually worked on mind. You know, you could focus your mind on different body parts. And I was able to actually raise the temperature of my hand. Focus energies into my hand. Nothing worked so far. Okay? Now what? You cut it off. What do you do now? It's annoying. It's not nice. It's not what I want. But it's my hand. So what am I supposed to do with it? So you wake up and you find your wife has a wart on her nose. You wake up and you discover that your wife is not the pleasant person you thought she was. She has a certain wart in her personality. So what do you do? So what you do is you try to cure it. And then you discover it's not curable. You suddenly discover it's not changing. This is just the way she's going to be. And I'm not going to change her. And then one day you come to this wonderful conclusion saying, this is who I married and this is who she is. What am I going to do? And the answer is, if you can come to terms with it, you can build. You will always discover things that are annoying. and there will be things that keep cropping up. Most couples are fighting the same points over and over and over again. It's not new points. If those of you will think back to your parents and the home you grew up in, if you saw your parents fighting, it was almost always the same thing, right? It was about this neighbor. It was about this dish. It was about whether the air conditioning should be on or off. It was about whether it was a good investment or bad investment to invest in gold or stocks or whatever. There were whatever the theme was, every couple has the cycle of fighting that keeps revolving over and over and over again. How do you stop it? Come to terms with it. I'm married to someone who has A or B or C weakness, and now, what do most people think? I married a loser. I did. Look at that. I'm telling you, she has these weaknesses. And what? I'm going to live with it. I'm not going to divorce. I'm going to make it work. She's a loser. No. I have weaknesses, she has weaknesses, I have a hand that has something I don't like about it, right? But I'm going to have to come to terms with it. I have no way out. There's a reality, I got to deal with it. There's nothing I can do to change it. So now I can be upset at it, or I could come to terms with it and say, that's me. What do people try to do? It's not me. You marry a woman who's very loud in the store. And when you walk into the store, she's doing something like this. I can't believe it! The milk over here is like 7 times the price at the store around the corner. And you're doing this. Right? You're thinking, how am I going to make sure they don't think I'm her husband? Right? So? But you are her husband. So she has a certain weakness. Okay? We got married. We were looking for a table. So we're going through these used furniture stores. And we see one kitchen table. And they tell us that'll be 550 shekel. Looked like a fair price. My wife and I looked at one another. We both realized we couldn't afford it. We turn around to walk out of the store. So shopkeeper goes to us, what do you want it for? And my wife goes, for 50 shekel, we'll take it. And I thought I was burying myself. You know, you can bargain a certain range that's fair. But from 550 to 50, I was like, oh no, this isn't nice. And the guy goes to my wife, for 120, will you take it? I'm thinking, how'd she do that? From 550, she said 50, and he didn't say, get out of here. I thought he'd start yelling at us. And I thought he'd say, you're making fun of us. We bought it for like, I think we made it 150 with delivery to Kiryat Moshe. So like the delivery would have cost us like 150. So, okay, well, I suddenly discovered, wow, oh, wait a second. She's onto something I would have never thought of, right? But what was my first thought? I was ready to run out the store. Let her deal. But I, you know, you're making fun of the person. He said, one day you're 550, you're saying 50. She won. Okay. We have to be able to say that's a part of me. And it's good that that's a part of me. And even if I disagree with it, it's still a part of me. And I want us to review what we've built so far. What we say is going to define most of our marriage. We have to be more careful what not to say than what yes to say. Shomer pivul shono. Shlomo HaMelech said he who watches his mouth and tongue will watch himself from danger. I invented a joke. True joke. All women who hear it, as far as I know, agree with it. Husband and wife are arguing. The wife says what you should never say, but she says it to her husband, I hate you. So the husband looks at the wife and says, and I hate you. And the wife looks back at the husband and says, can't believe you said that. And she breaks down into tears. And he looks at her and says, but you said it first. And she answers him, but you meant it. And that's true. Women will say things, and we'll discuss it in the women's speech class. They don't mean what they say. And we hear it the way we talk, and then we react. And we have to put the brakes. The key, the first key in Shalom Bayis, I don't always have to answer. Someone said, talking to your wife is like the user manual on a new program. You start reading the user manual, right? They tell you, do you accept the user terms? You start reading it, and after about 3 lines, you start, forget it, I accept, right? That's what happens with your wife. You start hearing the detail, and never mind, whatever you say, it's okay, right? But reality is that it's be'emet never mind. Once you got married, if you suddenly discover it's A or B or C, you got to make it work. The question is how to make it work. But we have to have limits. There are things I won't say. There are things I won't do. And even if it's done to me, I will not do it to the other person. Marriage is not about revenge. Marriage is about making it work. Ah, I suddenly discover a reality that I didn't expect. Okay, so now I got to make it work. I have news for you. There's no married person who did not discover a reality they didn't expect. No one. No one on the planet that got married without discovering this was not at all what I expected. It doesn't exist. The only time it exists is in a failed marriage. You could have a marriage where the two never connect, and if they never connect, they never discover that they're different than they thought they were. If they lead parallel lives, boyfriend, girlfriend, roommates, I do my thing, you do your thing, they could have this placid relationship where they never connect, so they never discover the other one is very different than who they were. We discussed one of the tools you use is Rav Nachman of Breslov. That sometimes there are situations where you have to remind yourself, hey, Hashem put me here, and it was supposed to be this way. Now I have to make it work. I have to make it work. I have to make it work with love. It's no different than the warts on my hands. It's part of my hand. It's part of me. I don't have a choice. I have to make it work. There's no way to change it. I didn't ask for this, but this is reality. Now let's make it work. Okay. Now a few tools in the positive, and with that we will end our Jewish home class for tonight. There's a simple exercise you can do, and you'll see it works wonders. Choose one person. Okay, we'll start with the humorous side of this. If I wanted you all to yawn, all I'd have to do is yawn, and you guys would suddenly have a very hard time not yawning. Even our listeners have a hard time when you hear someone yawning. You're all trying. I'm not going to yawn right now. I know. I see you trying to perk those lips, but when you hear someone yawn, you have to yawn. There's a natural, and what shocked me was I tried it on 3-month-old babies, and it works on them too. There's something instinctive, I don't understand it. I tried it on my kids. And so I told my children this as I was putting them to sleep. I told them, now I'm going to yawn, and you're going to see that you will feel like you have to yawn too, and that'll help you get tired, because kids always say, I'm not tired, but I can't go to sleep. So I started yawning in front of them, and then you see the kids doing this, right? I'm not going to yawn. But like all of you guys are trying to do right now. But there's another tool that works the same way, and that is smiling at someone and complimenting them. If you choose one person, until next week Sunday, till we have this class again, choose one person and smile to them a lot. And you'll suddenly discover they smile back to you. And if you say, very nice, see, it's working already. And if you choose and you really want to develop a friendship with someone, try to think of how many nice things you could say to the person. It's interesting how all of us walk around yearning for a positive word. And if someone tells us, I love the way you trim your beard. Someone tells us, your haircut is great. Someone tells us, any little comment, as frivolous as it may seem, we feel great. I love the way you choose the clothing you wear. The smallest compliment makes us happy. We start a day and we're happy. And if we can shower a person with little positive points, then we will find that person is suddenly very affable towards us. And that's a tool in marriage. That's a tool in every relationship. So that's, we discussed what not to do. Now as far as what yes to do, so positive. Little positive things. It doesn't have to be the big, huge thing. Little positive things move us forward. So that's in our class on the Jewish home. We have 10 minutes for